Hey there, welcome to episode 3 of Jazz United. This is Greg Bryant, host of Jazz After Hours on WBGO.
And this is Nate Chenin, the editorial director at WBGO. This is a show about what's happening in the jazz community among artists and audiences, and also just what's on our minds. So, Greg, I know there's something that's been on your mind lately.
Sure. Charles Tolliver, as a matter of fact, the great trumpeter, the great band leader, celebrating 50 years of his indie label, Strata East. This is the anniversary, as well as a brand new recording that's coming out on Gearbox Records, Charles Tolliver's quintet. It's called Connect.
I'm so glad that that you brought Charles into the focus here, because he's really an artist that unlocks a conversation both about the history and the present, you know, maybe even the future of this music.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone who really straddles that for us.
Absolutely. You know, Nate, you and I agree that Charles Tolliver is one of the unsung heroes of our music. It was really a thrill and a gas to get to speak to him back in February about not only his career, but launching Strata East Records. Man, when did you come into the awareness of Charles Tolliver?
You know, it's really interesting. When I was really becoming acquainted with the music, I definitely heard about Freddie Hubbard mm-hmm. early on. I heard about Lee Morgan early on. You know, I listened to those recordings. And Charles Tolliver is someone who, you know, I had to dig into that next layer, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. not to pun on Strata too much, but you know, he wasn't in that first round of names,
right?
And I think that's sort of a function of issues that have nothing to do with musicianship, you know.
Exactly.
There's like an extra there's a superstructure that has to do with that, and
right.
And then subsequently I got to see him a bunch, and mm-hmm. and I, you know, dug deep into the Strata East discography, and you begin to realize just how much of the narrative around this music sometimes has to do with the business of the music.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. And, you know, when we ask ourselves, you know, why Strata East, if we go back to the middle 60s and examine several of those players that you mentioned, you know, Freddie Hubbard, Blue Mitchell is another name, Tommy Turrentine, Lee Morgan, just in the trumpet category, a lot of these guys were having Tastemaker label Blue Note Records put out their content. They were introduced to the public via these great albums, sessions under their own name, when sometimes they were just working sidemen, but having a chance to run their first leader sessions under the banner of Blue Note. But had Charles come along even a year or two earlier than he appeared on the scene, Charles Tolliver probably could have been a Blue Note artist.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so easy to imagine him in the front line of Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers, you know, mm-hmm. like following that trajectory that Lee Morgan had.
Yep.
And you're right. It's his skill set, you know, was so high. Mm-hmm. And it's really all about the framework.
It really is. It's definitely a business thing. Not a musicianship issue. As a matter of fact, man, you mentioned the Jazz Messengers. A fellow messenger, Jackie McLean, mm-hmm. was really responsible for giving Charles Tolliver his first huge break. Tolliver had come back from Howard University to his native Harlem, New York, and heard through the grapevine that Jackie McLean was looking for a trumpet player. So there's this audition at Slugs, and basically Charles gets the gig. And matriculating with Jackie, he gets his first session on Blue Note, which was Right Now, this date that had Roy Haynes and Herbie Hancock in the cast. And Charles is just, you know, overjoyed with not only the possibility of rising to wider acclaim, but just to collaborate with these cats that he's been seeing in jam sessions and hearing on records and so forth. And he keeps that sideman a situation active through several other records with Jackie. But circa 1966, 1967, Blue Note Records is sold.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred Lion leaves the company, and we have guys like Charles Tolliver and Newark's own Woody Shaw, who are kind of let's say, caught in the pipeline. You know, it was their turn next, but it just didn't happen that way for them.
It's funny how familiar that story probably feels to contemporary musicians, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's been various seismic events that has disrupted that pipeline in the last, you know, 20, 30 years as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when I talked to Charles, that was one of the things I really wanted to know about, you know, was this the impetus that made you want to go DIY? You know, he joins Max Roach right after the Jackie McLean experience. And through that particular relationship, Max sort of mentors him, Max having run Debut Records, another short-lived label that had a DIY kind of spirit in the late 50s, early 60s. But Charles makes his own record and talks to Max and decides his pathway isn't through knocking on doors, it's to get the music out there by any means necessary.
Right.
That particular album, you know, Paper Man, was recorded while Charles was still with Max Roach. And one of his fellow bandmates in that unit was pianist Stanley Cowell. And as Charles told me in February, he and Stanley hit it off right away. And they had basically the dream of being band leaders themselves at the turn of the 70s. Mm-hmm. And this project, which initially was a quartet plus big band effort, they decided to call it Music Inc. And in that spirit of DIY that he did Paper Man with, he decided, hey, let's continue this and do our own thing. And that helped to be the birth of what's now known as Strata East.
Stanley and I, we just bonded, you know. And 1970, you know, we come off the road and stuff. And he said, you know, why don't we do big band? And that's how I got started. And so we went in the studio and did the first, what would become the first issuance of a recording on Strata's Records.
So this band, Music Inc., was, you know, to use a technical term, totally burning. just a killer band.
Yeah.
And, you know, they released a handful of albums on the label. One that I'm especially fond of is called Live in Tokyo.
Oh, that's a good one, man.
And it opens with a piece called Drought. And it's a great example of the energy and the intensity of the band, but also just the sheer magnetism and power of Charles's trumpet playing. So I'd love to hear a little bit of that.
Absolutely. Think about, you know, why Strata East? Why go with an indie label in the early 1970s? We have to think about a lot of things. I remember reading where Donald Byrd said it took him 2 years to convince Blue Note to do the record A New Perspective. And I was kind of shocked by that, being such a big fan of the Alfred Lion and Frank Wolf model of leaving the musicians alone and letting them make the art. But that was a bigger budget project, something that needed serious underwriting. It wasn't just a simple quintet and push play. You know, there's a choir, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a couple of added pieces to that. With Strata East, artists basically are bringing Charles their finished masters that they've produced themselves. In most cases, they've done most of the underwriting themselves, and they're needing a network by which to get the distribution, and they want to align with like-minded artists so that they're not only getting a team effort in the distribution, but they're aligning themselves creatively with people who are musically thinking and doing some of the same things. But Nate, you said there's a precursor kind of to the Strata model, right?
Yeah, this is really fascinating. So Mark Stryker, my friend and colleague who wrote a book called Jazz from Detroit, published last year, he includes a section in the book about artist collectives. And one of those is the Strata Corporation, which started in Detroit. And it's interesting that we're talking about this kind of alternative to the Blue Note model, because that's how this started.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Cox, a pianist from Detroit, and Charles Moore, a trumpeter, they were leaders of the Contemporary Jazz Quintet. And Greg, you know their Blue Note album, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they were unhappy with their experience on Blue Note. They didn't like how they weren't able to get the legendary Rudy Van Gelder experience, you know?
Right.
And they felt like they'd been kind of pushed around a bit. And so they decided to start their own collective. They called it the Strata Corporation, borrowing an idea from Joseph Schillinger, who used the word strata to refer to different compositional elements, sort of layered, like geological strata.
Mm-hmm.
And so they incorporated in 1969, and they had a vision that wasn't just a record label. They actually sold stock in the company, and they, you know, it was this corporate structure. And they had an educational initiative, they had, you know, publishing, and other musicians around the country started to take notice, and Tolliver and Cowell were among them. So they took a look at the model and they said, well, we don't really want to copy the corporate structure here, but as a tribute to the efforts in Detroit, they called it Strata East. And the thing that Charles told Mark Stryker was, the connection to Strata was separate from what Stanley and I created with Strata East, but shared one important thing in common: self-determination.
Absolutely. You know, when the artists are not receiving the big advance up front, but on the back end, they're reaping the full benefits of their success, it's a strong argument for a different model, as you've explained and alluded to. There were several that came along, Clifford Jordan, Pharoah Sanders, Max Roach, all of them had projects on Strata East.
Mm-hmm.
But one young gentleman in particular, a poet by the name of Gil Scott Heron, decided to try the Strata East model after he was dissatisfied with a major label relationship. Gil Scott had some previous success with a huge hit, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, via the Flying Dutchman label, which was distributed by ABC, Bob Thiel being the producer there. But that relationship grew thin, and Gil had heard about this new effort called Strata East, and he decides to approach Charles Tolliver. He walks into Charles's office, introduces himself, and Charles gives him the green light, and the record is off and running almost as soon as it hits the presses.
That went gold, and it was the perfect tool to demonstrate to jazz musicians, or any musician, that if you own a product that takes off, you're the major recipient of everything. And we were able to demonstrate that with the Scott Heron product. And it's interesting that, you know, decades later, Prince would do the same. So I was pleased to see that what we did, you know, finally filtered on out to that level of artistry out here, you know, big time. See that black boy over there running scared? His old man got a problem, and it's a bad one. He ain't done. This legend of Strata East just kept growing and growing throughout the 70s into the 80s. Nate, I don't know if you are a serious vinyl collector, but I am. And I have to stop myself sometimes from overspending and overbidding on eBay and the like, because these Strata East records, among many, are way out of my price range these days.
I recently, just maybe a year or two ago, I walked into my local record shop and they had a Clifford Jordan Glass Bead Games on the wall, and I had to stop myself from buying it for about $100. And,
oh,
you
man.
Know, that was probably a pretty good price for that
yeah.
for that record, actually.
Yeah, it is. It really is. The original, you know, Winter in America in Perfect Condition. Mm. You're going to cough up some ducats for that.
But part of the reason I mean, I don't know if it's part of the reason, but related to the collector's item stature of those Strata East albums was this mystery around Charles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Charles Tolliver, from the late 80s, really, you know, into the early to mid 2000s, he was not at the center of the conversation. And really, you know, depending on where you looked, he was referred to as this kind of phantom, you know.
Hmm.
And it's interesting to think about the reasons for that. You know, if you talk to Charles, he'll say, like, I never went anywhere. I was always around.
That's right.
But the industry and the sort of media narrative around him kind of moved on.
Yeah. But people were still seeking Charles out.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, you know, he gets this residency as a professor at the New School. And one of his proteges is a guy that's tearing up the scene right now, you know, Keon Harold.
Yeah.
And when you hear him play, you hear the spirit and the conception of young Charles Tolliver coming through Keon's spirit.
I was, you know, actively covering the New York scene during the time that Charles really came roaring back. And it really began, I guess it began in 2002 or thereabouts, when another trumpeter, David Weiss, invited him to play some gigs at the Jazz Standard. He eventually puts together a big band and starts playing with both a big band and a small group,
mm-hmm.
which then leads to a Blue Note release.
Right.
So Charles Tolliver, you know, the quintessential indie jazz artist,
uh-huh.
he gets his Blue Note release called
right.
With Love. It was released mm-hmm. in 2007 to considerable acclaim.
Yeah.
And then it was followed a couple years later by a live album on the Half Note label.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from that mid-2000s point on, he's really sort of back in circulation in every way.
Right.
And it's been really cool to see him getting his due, you know, in this century.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which gets us into 2020. Charles Tolliver has a brand new release on the Gearbox label with a stellar quintet. Jesse Davis on saxophone, Keith Brown, a brilliant young pianist on the scene now, Buster Williams and Lenny White. And when you told me about this, Nate, I almost lost it.
Yeah.
I had to hear it.
Yeah. Well, it's a really, really sharp record. And Gearbox is a label out of London. It's an independent label there. And, you know, interestingly, there's a British saxophonist named Binker Golding who guests mm-hmm. on a couple of tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so it's this American band, but there is a little bit of that transatlantic energy, you know, with Binker joining the band. And it's really cool to hear Charles, you know, out front again with a killer rhythm section, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To hear him with Buster in any context is great.
Oh, man. Absolutely.
And so, you know, this album, it's original compositions, and the lead single, I think, really captures the spirit and sound of the group. And this is a track that Charles calls Blue Soul.
Thank you.
That's Blue Soul from Charles Tolliver's album Connect. And it's such a grooving tune, you know. It's got a bit of that, like, it's sort of one step removed from a jazz boogaloo vibe, you know.
Yeah, man.
Really catchy melody and you know, that groove that Lenny White and Buster Williams, you know, like, they could lay that
Good
down
point.
In their sleep. But it's
I was going there.
Yeah.
You need an original beat, hire Lenny White.
Right. And again, you know, we're talking sort of past and present here. Mm-hmm. This is a tune that feels, I mean, to me, it feels contemporary, but it also is very much connected to that 1960s energy, you know?
Sure.
You could imagine it coming out then and just being like a soul jazz staple.
Absolutely, man. Totally fresh, totally for the people. But it's got all the intellect you'd ever want as well. Just a testament to how well these guys marry that visceral and cerebral energy.
Mm. I guess as a final thought, what do you think the example of Charles Tolliver and the artistry of Charles Tolliver, what does it have to say to us today? What can we learn from this?
I think that artists are extremely intelligent, extremely driven, and they're having to, as one of my friends says, push a van up a hill while people are pelting you with rocks. You know, it's it's almost a thankless situation. It's a sacrifice, and the level of determination that you really have to be successful. Your success is all up to you. And those that cut through the clutter are often the most talented as well as the most ingenuitive. That's what it really says to me.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go out with another taste of Blue Soul?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the song that I want to send us out here.
Right on, man.
And, you know, long live Charles Tolliver. You know, may we have a lot more music from him and also see his example sort of ripple outward.
100%. Jazz United is hosted by me, Greg Bryant.
And by me, Nate Jeanette. You can find full tracks of the music we featured in this episode at our show page on wbgo.org. You can also subscribe, and please do subscribe to our show wherever you find your podcasts.
Special thanks to our producer, Sarah Carson, and our senior producer, Simon Rentner.
Our theme song is United by Newark's own Wayne Shorter, recorded by another Newark native, the late trumpeter, Woody Shaw. We'll catch you next time.